As he said, I woke up half hour ago being told I'm doing this talk. So the last time I looked at, this is my slide deck for TechEd 2012. So I did a talk last year, which was on a very, very similar topic, which was on XAML binding view models. Now, the last time I looked at this was at TechEd last year. So it's been 12 months since I've looked at my own code demos. So I don't know how many of you can remember any code you wrote 12 months ago. So hopefully you guys will just forgive me if I stuff up here and there. Now, I'm going to close Skype because I'm sure someone's going to quit Skype. Quit. I don't have any other instant messaging stuff open. Nope. Pro tip for everyone. Windows X, you hit Mobility Center, and you hit presentation mode. So lots of applications respect that. So things like Skype, MSN, etc. Once you hit that, they shut up. So you won't get all the pop-ups. Okay, so a little bit about me. I work for Infragistics. I'm the regional technical evangelist for them. Infragistics is a company that does UI components. So grids, charts, things like that across Windows 8, Windows Phone, iPhone, Android, etc. A little bit more about me. So you can tell this is my slide deck from last year. So I, last year I released a book on Silverlight 5. yeah, I'll hide my shame. Okay, now, so originally, so you're all here because of the title of the presentation, which was how to do cross-platform development. So how to do it between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. Now, what Coetzee was probably going to speak on was the different techniques that you can use to go about actually implementing this in code. So what we're going to do today is have a look at how we can write one common code base which you can run on Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. There are a bunch of different ways that you can do it. The way that I'm going to be doing it today is with a pattern called MVVM, which stands for Model View View Model. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you off from the very, very basics, from first principles, how you would go about this. So I can see quite a few people in the room who are MVVM experts, so a lot of them are going to be smiling and nodding. So I'm going to take you from first principles. So why are we using things like iNotify property change, how we go about setting these things up, how we can use portable class libraries. So anyone who's new to this sort of stuff, you'll be able to pick it up. So the agenda was based around this. So I'll take you through data binding first and why it's a good thing and how by using that we'll be able to get this cross-platform between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. Look at view models, how we actually build them up to do this sort of pattern. iNotify property change, observable collections, data templates to make things look sexy, commands, PCL. Caliban Micro, I'm going to skip because I haven't had a chance to install that framework on at all, and I can't remember how to do the bootstrap for it. So we'll probably have to skip off that last bit. So I started off with my first demo, updating the UI manually. Now, the good thing is, at the end of last year, after my TechEd talk, I actually, where are we? Demos. TechEd. So what I did after my session last year was my video got released, and so I watched my video, then I went back over my code, and then I actually did a git check-in at different timestamps. So if you have a look at all of the check-ins that I've got one at each timestamp, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, so you could work through the code while you're watching my video last year. So what's really good about that is if I stuff up, I can look at my own code from last year, so we should be okay. Okay, so for my first demo, I'm going to go about how you may go about updating the UI manually. So anyone who was doing Windows Forms development, it was a while ago, but in my job, what I do, I see quite a lot of people still using Windows Forms. So we'll go over how you may have gone about updating the UI manually. So we'll look at it, then we'll have a look at the reasons why doing it that way is bad, so then we know why we're going to be doing it a different way. So I'm going to go C# Windows Store blank app demos. Please work demo 1. Okay, so this is the default one. So show of hands, how many people have done a file new project on a Windows 8 application so far? bit less than half the room? Okay, that's fine. For anyone who hasn't, there we go. It looks pretty much exactly the same as any other .NET desktop app project. So Windows 8, WPF, Silverlight, they all kind of look like that. So with the only thing that we've got in here at the moment, because it's a blank one, let's close that, we've got mainpage.xaml. Okay, very first thing that I'm going to do is wait for it to load up. There we go. I'm going to put in a stack panel. So for me, stack panel is the number one control in the entire framework. That font's small. I'm going to scroll it for you. Big enough yet? Okay. Yeah, stack panel. Every single one of my applications, all of my UIs are done via stack panels. It makes everything just line up nicely. Otherwise, you're forever trying to move pixels up one, down one. So what we're going to do here, we're going to do two things. We're going to add a button. We're going to call it my button. And we're going to have its contents sent to... No, we're not. We're leaving it like that. Then we're going to add a text block. So two different ones. A text box is something you can type into. A text block is a label. And let's give it that a name of our text block. Cool. Now, because my resolution is so high, we need to go font size, crank that up to about 24. Give it some text. There we go. Thanks. Font size, 72. There we go. Okay, so far all we've got on our UI is a button and a text block. So what a lot of people probably do is on the text block, on the button, I'm going to double click that. And that seems to be a new feature I only just discovered. If you have a XAML control, if you click in it, you can update it. I don't know when that came about. Undo. Anyway, if I double click on it, it's going to do the standard wire up a click event. So a lot of this, when we get started, probably do it that way. So when we click that button, we're going to do text block dot text equals hello world. Hit F5, it'll compile. We hit click me, hello world. So I'm sure lots of us have done that. We've found that UI element and we've gone and updated it manually. Now, when we get started, doing that way is fine, but unfortunately, when we have a look at the MVVM framework, what we're going to be seeing there is it's very easy to... you can change your UI, and then suddenly your code doesn't compile at all. Now, doing it like that, text block dot text, so it may work on that, but if we change that to something like a radio button or a checkbox, so we're going to be referencing each of those controls individually, and we're going to be referencing individual properties on that control, which means we can't just chop and change UI controls around. So on the text block, it was called text, but on the button, the label was actually a property called content. So if you do try and change it from a button to a text block, for example, as soon as you do that, your code's not going to compile because you're referencing properties on a control. So we don't like doing things with controls directly. So what we're going to do instead is close that. What we're going to do next is title the couple to the view. That's bad. Delete the text block. Yeah, cool. There we go. So rather than referencing those controls individually, what we're going to do is use the model view, view model pattern. So then we can just have a state, and then all of our UI controls are going to have a look at our state, which is held in the view model. So I'll go through and show you the code how to do that. Then we'll go back to the slide, and I'll explain it a little bit better. So we go back to this. We're going to delete the text block button logic. Yep. Sorry, refreshing my memory. It's been 12 months. Okay, button can go. My click event can stay there. Cool. So I'm going to create two folders now. Add new folder. I'm going to have a folder for views. We're going to have a folder for view models. So we're going to create a brand new class. We're going to call it main page view model. Hit OK. So view models are just a plain standard class. And the view models are going to hold the state for what your screen should be showing. So your view model is going to be holding things like any data that's downloaded from a web service, the current state of text that is in buttons, things like that. So this one class is going to hold the state for the entire screen. Our UI is going to be extremely dumb. It's not going to know anything. It's just going to be data bind. It's going to just data bind directly to this class. So let's make this public, because I can't hear the amount of times I've forgotten to set that public, and then I'm swearing at it for quite a while. So we're going to add a new property. Pro tip for anyone who hasn't seen it. You can't see it because I haven't scrolled in. So if you type in prop for property, hit tab, it'll actually do an auto property for you. So you can type in string, hit tab, greeting, bam. So we've got an auto property there. View model, view text block, then bind it. Okay, that's fine. So at the moment, the state of our screen is just a single property called greeting, so we were able to update that to put whatever text we want in there. So if we go back to the XAML, so our text block now, we can say the text equals. So there's a format to say how you go about binding. So you put in the curly braces, you type in binding, and then you can type in the name of the property that you want to bind it to. So in that case, that was called greeting. So now this text block knows to bind to that data and just show it there. But we haven't told this view, this screen yet, where it should be getting that data from. Now, there are lots of ways to wire up the view model with this screen, but the easiest way, if I go page.dataContext, so this is what you do for demos when you're doing real code. Don't do it this way. So for the data context of this page, we're going to say it should be local. Let's compile first. Need to tell it the namespace that it's in. So I'm going to bring in the namespace, so XML namespace. I'm going to call it view models, and that's going to equal IntelliSense. There we go. Please work demo one. There we go. Okay, so in the data context now I can reference view models, and we've only got one there, main page view model. Let's just clean that up a bit. There we go. So we've given this page our view model now, so now we can start data binding. So let's just go into our view model. I'm just going to CTOR, constructor, weird, and hit tab, it'll bring it up. So we're just going to go greeting equals hello world from view model. So if everything works well, we should see, there we go. So there wasn't that much code to get that working. We created a new blank class, we added a single property to it, and then we just changed our view so it knows to data bind to our view model. So just by doing those few little things, now we've made our UI a bit more flexible. So we can go and change it from being a text block that is displaying this to maybe a text box, or maybe an Infogistics awesome control, something like that. So that's step one. But now, we're just reading things from the view model at the moment. What we want to do is do things on the screen and have that update the view model, so then the screen is going to update itself. So let's go back. Okay, so the question was, am I going to show how you can set the view model in a real app? It depends is the crappy answer. Once you get into this a little bit more, so I'm going to be showing how you can do everything by hand. so you can do it this way. And one, once you start getting into it a little bit more seriously, you're more than likely going to be using an MVVM framework to help you out with this. So something like MVVM Lite or Caliburn Micro. And so with those ones, they usually have a little bit of magic where you just, in app.startup, you put in a little bit of code so we can you point it at where all your view models live. You can find all your view models. And so by doing the pattern of having the view and the view model have the same name, so customer's view model, it'll automatically wire them up for you. So that's one way of doing it. Another way is by using a locator pattern. So you do a little bit of inversion of control. So you can set that up. You just, again, point it at where all of your view models are. So then in your view, you can set the data context. Rather than hard wiring that view model in there, you can just do a static resource, point to your locator class that can new up the view model that it needs. Okay, let's go back to our view. So at the moment, we're just doing read-only. So let's add in another button. Content equals add one. So what we're going to do now is, rather than text, we're going to make this a business app, and we're going to have widgets. So whenever we click on a button, we're going to add a new widget. So to do that, we're going to have a new text block. Get rid of that. So we're going to bind to something called total. So we're going to have the total number of widgets that we've made so far. So we're just going to display that. Then whenever we click this button, we're going to add one more widget to this. So same thing, let's double click that. Let's go back to our view model and let's add that new property. So we go prop tab int tab total for our total number of widgets. So that's going to, because it's an int, that's just going to default to zero. So actually, if I go back to our UI now, go back to the XAML, do a recompile. There we go. So we're already getting design time data now. So because we've wired all of this up to just do data binding to a view model, we haven't done anything, but our UI is showing this. So I could change the default values and it'll come up. So this is a good way to have some design time values, a very cheap, nasty way of getting some design time values, just so your designers, when they open up Blend, they can at least have something to play around with. Now, we've got our button, so let's just write the logic to increment that by one. So what we need to do, var view model. So we just need to get a handle to our view model. Now, again, I'm taking you through first principles how to do this, and I'm going to go through why we're not going to do this, and I'll show you a better way to do this. Anyone who knows this pattern, they're probably yelling at me for typing this bit of code in right now. But what we're going to do, we need to get a reference to that view model so we can actually increment it. So to do that, we're going to say this dot, because we're currently in the view, view.data context as main view model. Main page view model. Cool. So then it'll just be view model dot add one. So in our view model, we're just going to call one method that's going to do that. So I can tell Visual Studio to just generate that for me. Go back into our view model. And there we go. We've now, in our view model, we've now got an add one method. So let's just change that to public void add one. We're going to go total plus equals one. There we go. We've got our awesome business logic. We hit our five. We added add one. Nothing happens. Now, I didn't stuff up. I did actually expect that. So if I'm going to put in a breakpoint, if we have a look at this, scroll down, awesome business logic, breakpoint, click it. So it is actually hitting our breakpoint. If we have a look at the value right now, you may not be able to see that, but it does say 15. We step over it and it says 16. We continue on, but it still says 0. Now, there's a reason why this is happening. When we're doing binding to our class, that's fine. It will, the very first time it tries to evaluate the binding on that UI control, it goes down, looks at our view model, looks at the current value for that property, and then puts that into the view. Now, the problem is, though, is that the view never knows when it needs to go and get a new value out. It can't sit there continuously polling the class, because that's just silly, that your CPU would be sitting at 100% CPU all the time. So what we need to do is we need to give the view some hints to let it know when it needs to update itself. If we go back, so on our view model, on our total property, I'm just going to move this up, paste. So on our view model, we need to implement something called iNotify property changed interface. So if we go Alt Enter, I can tell us to implement it. Would you like to include annotations? Yeah. Oh, and they've put in a completely different one to what I'm used to. That's cool. I can handle that. Okay. So usually, if I go undo. I'll use the Visual Studio one instead. Implement it. There we go. So Visual Studio, when it detects that you've got an interface there, that you haven't implemented all of the properties and methods for it, it will come up with a red squiggle. If you go Control Full Stop, you can tell Visual Studio to automatically implement that property for us. So it goes through and it adds in that event, which that interface handles. Now, whenever our user interface binds to a class, you'll have a look at that class and see if it does implement this interface called iNotify property changed. If your UI detects that your view model implements that one interface, straight away it'll look for that event called property changed event, and so your UI will now subscribe to that. Now, whenever your view model updates itself, all it has to do is just raise that event, and your UI now knows it has to go and pull back the property. So let's go back up here. So for total, whenever we change that, we just need to give a little hint. So we're just going to change it to a property with a backing field. Whenever we set it, we're just going to check if property change event handler. For event change handler. Copy. B-pun? Was his property changed? Oh, yeah, sorry. I was looking at the class, not the property name. Thank you. So if it doesn't equal null, so we'll make sure that our UI has actually data bound to this. If something has data bound to it, then we just call that property changed event so that anything that's subscribed to it will know, and we'll say, hey, a property of this name changed, so anything that was data bound to that property, please go and update yourself. No? We need some more args. Yeah. There we go. Total. This. Okay, hit F5. So if we just by implementing that one interface, it's going to go through, step through that, and that's all working. So far we've only had to do two things. We've created a new view model class, so that was just a plain old CLR object. Then we implemented one interface to let our UI know, hey, we changed something, please update yourself. Now, for anyone who's been in any sessions this week, they would have heard that. So for each property, we're going to have to implement this thing. You can use some other frameworks such as Photo, so automatically just add property change events to each property in your view model. But those are all advanced topics, so we're just going to worry about doing it like this so far. We've done that. We've created business logic. Increment. We've done that. Cool. Okay. So we're doing all of this for a reason. So remember, we're doing all of this so that then we can create cross-platform code between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. So again, I'm just taking you through all the base principles. In about another 10 minutes, I'll show you how we're going to be having one app which is going to work between those two applications. So we've done that. Now, the issue that we've got here is we've still got some things in here, like we've set some names on some controls. If we go into the code behind for this, we've got a bunch of code here where we're grabbing view models and things. So we can clean all of this up. So at the moment, on our button click event, we're actually going to, we're trying to find our view model, then we're calling some methods on it. So just like how we bound UI controls to our view model, we can actually wire up buttons. We can wire up buttons to our view model, so when we click on the button, it actually just invokes a method in our view model. So the way we go about this is with commands. Now, there are MVVM frameworks out there, like MVVM Lite, things like that, where they give you the command class, so you can just do that and then and roll with it. But it's only about three lines of code, so we can actually write this ourselves. If I remember how to, yes, I remember how to. Okay, in our view model, I'm going to scroll all the way down to the bottom. We're going to add our new command class and implement an interface. So again, we can just tell Visual Studio, command full stop, bring in the using statement, command full stop, implement it. There we go. So that's all that there is for a command class. So we're just going to, oh, there we go, and there's my alarm to wake up. So that was my original time I was going to get up today. No. Scroll down, I just need, that's one property. Okay, so in this command class, you can see that it's got, two things. It's got a Boolean property on it called a method called can execute. So that would tell the UI if you're allowed to click that button or not. So we can just set this can execute to true. Actually, let's set it to false first, and then we can come back and change it later. Return false. So we can talk about how that can make your UI update itself automatically with enabling disabling buttons. Now, whenever this returns back to our UI that it can execute something, we're going to put in the code to say how it's meant to go about actually executing something. So for this, we're going to give it a little private property called execute action, where we're going to tell it the action that it can execute. So whenever we construct one of these commands, we're going to take in the constructor, we're going to take in... Where are we? That bit. So whenever we construct one of these commands, we're going to take in an action, which is just a pointer to the method that we want to execute. And we just set our private property, execute action equals the things that we want to execute. Can execute, we're going to say false. And when something says to actually execute this, we're just going to call that passing parameter. So when we construct this, we point it at the methods that we want it to actually run. And when it says execute, we just say, hey, that pointer that we had, just go and actually execute that. Execute action. Ah, cool. And if we hover over that, it actually said tail recursive call. There you go, tail recursive call, execute action. Okay, so we've done that. So I can actually clean everything up. Yep, that's fine. Okay, so let's go back to we're in our view model. So all of that was just five lines of code. So lots of the MVVM frameworks have been created just for those four lines of code. So everyone now can go back home, like fill in those three lines of code that I did, package it up, put it up onto NuGet, and you can call it your own MVVM framework. Everyone would download it. So I'm going to collapse that. Now, so we've got one property that our UI can bind to, which is called greeting. We've got another one called total that it can bind to. So now we're going to create a new property for our buttons to bind to. So if I add this in, we've got a new public property called iCommand. So now all of our buttons and that can hook up to this. I'm going to call update greeting command. In our constructor, we're just going to initialize that. So update greeting command equals a new delegate command, yep. So in the constructor, we just point at the method that it should be executing. So in this case, we're going to say object pointer to add one. Cool. Okay, so we've got that new property we can bind to. We go back to our XAML for our button now. We can actually go and change this. So rather than a click event, we can change that to a command, exact same syntax, binding. We can update, and here we go. We've even got IntelliSense, so because we've got data binding happening, we can see all those properties on there. So straight away, we can tell that button to data bind to that. Let's hit F5, just make sure this works before I start going through. So there we go. We can see add one is disabled now because that command is returning back false. So in there, that's where you can add your own business logic in there. So you could say, if you're currently pulling stuff back from the network or you're still currently saving, set that to disabled. So then you can say, once everything's finished, set that to true, your UI will automatically refresh itself and the button will be enabled. So let's go back, let's change this so it returns true so we can actually execute this. Collapse that. Cool, so let's go and strip out all of our code now. So I don't need a reference to my text block anymore. So now our XAML element is just text block, still just text block. Our button, we have nothing in there except for a single binding. Cool. So now our code behind for our XAML, we can go through and delete these comments. No one reads comments. We can get rid of these comments. Same thing. So we don't need this onNavigator2 property anymore. We don't need this button click. We don't need this button click anymore. So our code behind doesn't have any of that. That's redundant. We get rid of that. That's redundant. We get rid of that. We don't need that. We clean that up. So now our UI has no code in it. It's got this one line that I can't get rid of just because it needs to initialize itself. But our UI now has nothing there. The actual XAML is just three lines of XAML, text block, button. And our actual view model has nothing except for one constructor to just initialize some of these properties, the three properties that we need, and a single method. So if we hit F5 now, we've hit add one, there we go. So that was a long roundabout way to show you stuff from first principles to show you how to set all of this up. Now, there was a lot less code there than trying to go... At the end of the day, there was only three properties, constructed to initialize those properties. Now, UI just had a single line, which was binding to it. If we were doing this the old way of trying to do it all manually, we'd have those lines in there to say textblock.text equals whatever. And each time we did update that value, we're going to be going back and going textblock.text equals each time we update that value. And then we're probably going to forget one place where it happens. And then we're going to get back bugs saying, wait, our UI is not updating. So it may have seemed like there are more lines of code there, but you're probably going to end up with less lines of code because you're not having to tell the UI explicitly to update itself each time. Okay, so now that we know how to do all of that, we can get to the cool stuff of everything that we just built there is cross-platform. So what we did was we built up the view model. We had the view, we used data binding, so that's how it was pulling the values back. Our view model implemented iNotify property change, so whenever it updates itself, it sends a message back up to the view so the view knows to refresh itself. So we've done all of that. Now, the model bit, that's going to be your data objects from usually from somewhere else. So if you're pulling data back from customers or orders, those model objects are going to be customers or orders. In fact, I think I have... No. Okay, my cool animation's in the next bit. Okay, so why are we going to do this? So the important bit is that it separates the UI from the business logic. Why we want to do that is so we can get cross-platform. So if we still had all that stuff referencing the UI, then it would work in Windows 8, but it's not going to work in Windows Phone 8 because they have different properties. It's not going to work on Silverlight. It's not going to work in WPF. So now that we've separated all of this out into just a single class where we're doing all that business logic, we can now move that class around. And we've done that. Cross-platform. So yep, get reusable code across Win 8, Windows Phone, WPF, Silverlight, and iOS Android. dirty word at this conference, maybe, but all of these techniques, you can do it across Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, and then if you use another framework such as Xamarin, you can actually extend this further and use it on iOS and Android. So all these techniques were showing that you have one common code base where 80% of it will be able to be used across even iOS and Android if you want to extend your apps across there. So let's have a look how we actually do this. So at the moment, we've got our view model here to class. So to make this more portable, we're going to right-click, add a new project. We're going to create a new portable class library. And we're going to call that portable class library 1. You'd probably call it something better than that. Now, this is a cool screen. At this point, you can tell it which frameworks are going to be supporting. And so it does that so that it knows what are the common API calls that it has across all of those frameworks. So if we have it for Silverlight 4, it's going to have a few frameworks. If we have Silverlight 5, it's going to have a lot more common frameworks. We just get rid of that one. Same thing with .NET 4. When you go to .NET 4 or 5, you have more things built in. You can even create Xbox 360 apps. Now, we're not going to use this Xbox 360 tick because the Xbox 360 has the most restricted API out of all of them. It's missing things like commands. I think it's missing XML namespaces, things like that. So don't ever click Xbox 360. As fun as it looks like to do it, don't do it. Same thing here. Windows Phone 8 has a lot more. So it even warned you, if I have Windows Phone 7, it's going to lower us down to Silverlight 4, because that's the lowest common denominator. Set to Windows 8, it can take us all the way up to the common things that are in .NET 4, 5, and Windows 8 applications. So hit OK. Cool, so our portable class library, delete, has nothing. We're going to go into here, we're going to copy this view model. Then we're going to exclude it from the project. We're going to go down to portable class library. We're going to create a new folder, view models. We're going to paste it into there. Paste it into it. Oh, because it was excluded from the project, maybe. Show all files. There we go. Include it in the project. Get rid of that. Cool, let's change the namespace to portable class library 1. Compile, cool, that's going to fail. So now we're back into our, okay, please work demo. So we just need to add a reference to our portable class library. Okay. So at the moment, it's looking for the view models in this project. So it's not going to find them in this project because it's in the reference project. So if we scroll down, we're going to see portable class library 1. Whoops. Portable class library 1 dot view models. So we hit build. That should work. We hit F5. Cool. Everything's still working exactly the same, but now all of our core business logic, which is how to make awesome widgets, is in a portable class library. So now our core business logic we can go and use across Windows 8, Silverlight, WPF, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, etc. So this is why we went that roundabout way of how to get here. So our business logic is now portable. Our UI is completely stupid and does nothing except for binding things. Now, you can get your UI to still be smart by using things like behaviors and converters and things like that, but that's all still just stupid UI logic. All of your cool business logic should be in that portable class library. Then you can still add things like unit tests to make sure that you are bringing your widgets back from your web service correctly. So just to make sure that's all not smoke and mirrors, right click, I'm going to add a new project, and we're going to reference that portable class library and keep on going. Now, last year when I added a new project, I did it between Windows 8 and Silverlight. That was when we had Visual Studio 2010 or 20, I can't remember. So I'm going to try it with a Windows Phone 8 application. So I don't know if my code is going to work because Windows Phone 8 didn't exist this time last year. So Phone Application 1, create a new blank one, Windows Phone 8. Okay, same sort of thing. For our phone application, we're going to add a reference. We're going to add it to our portable class library. Hit OK. Make make that smaller, scroll across, and we're going to zoom in. So same thing, in our phone UI, we're going to go XML namespace, we're going to view models equals, there you go, portable class library one dot view models. Okay, now for the rest of the UI code, I'm actually going to go back to our Windows 8 UI. I'm going to scroll down, I'm going to actually just copy all of our XAML code, go back, and inside of here, paste that in. There we go, we're already starting to get it all coming across. Let's change it as a startup project. Oh, so the reason why our UI isn't here yet is because we haven't actually told our screen to set that as a data context. So we're going to go, what's our class called? Phone application page, there we go, dot data context. So we're going to tell it that should be our, in our view models namespace, main page view model, there we go. So all of our UI elements starting to come through. Hit F5, it's going to go off, spin up that emulator, and you all know that I got the code right first time. Hey, there we go. So there we go. At the moment, we have widget business logic. It's being worked used across two different applications. So I think that's pretty cool. So that's the easiest way to go about actually doing this. Now, for anyone who's been paying attention, Microsoft this week have been announcing that they've got a new competition coming up called AppTember. So what Microsoft want is for you guys to create a whole bunch of applications for them. And the competition is to create two sets of applications. In fact, let's just bring up the website right now. aka.ms/AppTember, I think it was. What the? So here we go. So the competition Microsoft is having right now. So David Glover, you still in the room? There you go. So David Glover, right down the back corner with a shiny head. At the end of the session, you can go speak to him. And he'll be able to tell you a little bit more about this. So Microsoft have a competition. You need to create four applications in total. They want you to create two Windows 8 applications and publish them. They want you to create two Windows Phone applications and publish them. If you do that, then there's a chance for you to win awesome, cool prizes. I don't know what the prizes are. Oh, here you go. Nokia 520s, Xbox Kinect bundles, things like that. So they want you to create four applications, two on each platform. Now, we just had a look how we can create a whole bunch of business logic, which allows you to create an app on Windows 8 and Windows Phone. So anyone here who's thinking about entering this, you only really need to create two apps because you're going to create one, make it portable, and then you're going to write all the code so it runs on Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. If you write one app, you'll be able to submit two of them. So you only have to do that twice and you can get some free stuff. Now we go back to my slides because I have no idea what the next slide is. Yes, we did all of that. Okay, so we're up to this stage at the moment. So we've had a look at some basic properties, so we've found strings and ints and things like that. But we're probably going to have, in a real app, we're probably going to have some more serious properties than that. So again, with something like customers and orders, we're probably going to have a property which says the current customer that we're working with. So remember the view model, the view model is holding the current state of our page. So it's holding the state for what our UI should be showing. So if we bring it up and our screen is called customer orders view, then we're going to have a customer orders view model. That's holding all the state. So we're going to have a property called current customer, where you're going to be holding the current customer that you probably brought back from a web service or something. So all your UI is now binding to that one property. We're then probably going to have a list of orders that that customer has. So we're going to have a second property called list, and we're going to just data bind to that. So that's why I was saying that's a view model holding the state. So our model is going to be our customers and our orders. Now at this stage, that's when people probably ask, yeah, but how do we get that into this application? So animation. You can get that your models from somewhere else. So most applications nowadays are all connected applications. Applications that sit there and do nothing are probably just a game. So things like Angry Birds, it's going to be on the phone. It doesn't need any external data. Maybe something like a calculator application on your phone. That's about there's only a few cases where you're not going to be actually reaching out to the internet, pulling back some real data. So you can get that data from a WCF, a web service that you've created, or maybe a REST service. If I was doing this talk today, if I'd have written the slide, I probably would have said from Azure Mobile Services, things like that. But in the end, you just have some data, you pull it into your view model, then you just start binding to it. Oh, there you go, database. Okay, organizing these files. Now, when you start off and you go file new project, Microsoft go and put all of your views in the root of the project. That's fine when you have a single page in your application. Once you start getting serious and you've got these two applications that you've got going now, Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, then you're gonna have an issue with like just views just going everywhere. Now, there are a few different ways you can go about organizing these. The way that I do it is I create those two folders, view models and views, put all of our views in there, admin view, main view, report view, and I create the corresponding view model for them in the view models folder. And again, going by that naming convention, it makes it very easy to line them up. Now, another way that people like doing it is they do it like doing it a folder per feature. So you have the admin screen, so then all the classes that you need for it are in there. Same thing with report. So there are merits for going either way. If you're going to have an application that has 5-6 pages, this is probably the nicer way to go about it because it keeps them clumped up. If you're going to create a big, serious enterprise application, then you probably do this other way around. But it also means that you can put some of these views and view models off into other assemblies, which you can get your application just load up as it needs on demand. Although that said, you're probably going to have these view models off in a portable class library anyway, which makes this all a moot point because you're just going to have a views folder. Okay, so we've got data. Now, remember how I was saying our views should be stupid? There should be no logic in there. Now, they can be stupid, but you can still make your UI look sexy by using things such as data templates. So all of this is going to be just lists of data. So we've got, what have we got there? We've got a list of ice creams. We've got a list of ice creams. So in this case, we've got a list view that we've just data bound, but we've set a data template to make it sexy. Same thing with a Windows 8 grid view and a grouped data view. All of these are just lists of data, but the UI control, when you bind to it, knows how to do stuff. So we're going to look at how to do that. Now, to demonstrate this, I am going to create a new business object. So let's go into Please Work Demo. Stop. I'm just going to stop using this. I'm going to unload this Windows Phone 8 project, and we're just going to go back to our portable class library. Actually, I'm just going to unload everything. I'm going to go back to this because I know this works. Cool. So we're back to this. We're just going to set this back to Please Work Demo. Build, and that's going to fail because in view models we need to show all files. So what I'm showing now does still work in portable class library, but I just want to make sure that the code works. So I'm just going to include this in project. There we go. Okay, so let's just run this, make sure we're back to the exact same point we were 2 minutes ago. Add. Okay, cool. We're back to where we were. So we've got our views, we've got our view models. I'm going to add a new folder. Add a new folder called models. Serious business application. We're going to add a new class. So our model is going to be ice creams. just double check what the, okay, it's all lowercase. Yeah, it is one word. It's not two words, ice cream. Okay, ice cream. Add that new class. Okay, so our model. So our ice creams have a few properties. It's going to have string, the name of the ice cream. We're going to have another string, which is going to be the type of ice cream, because we may have standard ice cream, we may have sorbets, we may have gelatos. They're all different types of ice creams. Then we've got a prop of the image and, sorry, category. Let's just copy and paste this. See, it's good keeping notes for your presentations, because you never know if 12 months later you're going to be doing it again. Bring in. Oh, I didn't delete that. Build. Cool. I'll zoom in a little bit. For anyone wondering why all of this stuff is grayed out, any presenter will tell you should have this one thing installed on called a ReSharper. It makes programming so much easier. And all any organization where they have a big folder full of coding standards, you can usually throw them all out, just throw ReSharper in, and it's just going to yell at your developers when they're doing something wrong. They're going to have big red squiggly lines under everything. So, in this case, all of the stuff is grayed out because they're not being used at all. So it's telling us, well, it's not required, we can safely remove them. Alt-Enter, there we go. We've cleaned up our code. So now we've got our model object here, our ice cream. We can start creating lists of these now. So we could be getting our list of ice creams from a web service and pulling them back. For this, we're just going to instantiate our list of ice creams. So in view models, we go back into our main page view model. We're going to go prop, we're going to create a list of ice cream. We're going to call that property ice creams. So we've got our list of ice creams. When our main view gets constructed, we're going to call a method called get ice creams, generate a new method. So usually at this point, that's where we're going to be making our REST service calls to, sorry, I'll zoom in. That's where we'll be making our web service calls, our REST service calls to go off, pull back our data from a database for all of our ice creams. So we're going to cheat and we're going to put them all in here. So we're going to say ice creams equals new list of ice creams. And we're going to use curly braces to instantiate this. So we can add inline a new ice cream. We can use curly braces to instantiate the properties on that. So we've got name equals chocolate. Category equals, yum. And then a reference to the image. Now, because the ice creams, it's going to be a cooking show. Here are some I created earlier. Copy. Paste. So what we've got is the name of it, the category. So we have low-fat frozen yogurt, apparently. And then we're just calling set image. Oh, that's right, I can't do this inline. That's okay. And I've got one too many braces down here. Build. Okay. Another good thing, great shortcut, Control KD, just reformats everything. Okay, so we're creating an ice cream, and then we're just calling a single helper method called setImage. I'm cheating a little bit. Rather than in the UI, just having an image control that we're going to tell us to go off to the web and do stuff, because we've got all the images here, that's why in our ice cream, we've got a little helper method here, which is called setImage. So we're just going to new up a bitmap image. You probably just leave that as a URL. You probably have all your ice cream images assets up in the web somewhere. So you probably just leave it as a URL. So then at runtime, the image control will just go off, hit the web, pull it back down. In this case, because it's a demo, I'm just calling this one method to make sure that we have our ice creams. Okay, so we have our ice creams. Let's hit F4 5 to make it sure it runs? No, because we've done nothing yet. So we have our list of ice creams, but in our UI, we haven't actually bound anything to this yet. So, yeah, that's fine. It is a list view, okay. So there are a few different controls that we could have been using here, so I just needed to double check which one I used. So let's open this up. We're going to use a list view. Now, exactly the same way that we were binding to text and to commands, our list view, we're going to set the item source, same exact thing, binding, and so this time we're going to be binding to, there we go, our list of ice cream. So IntelliSensor's already brought up the ice cream property for us because we're doing all that data binding. So if we scroll down, well, let's hit F5, make sure this works so far. Okay, that's kind of cool. We've got our list of ice creams that we pulled back from a web service or something. We've got our list view, and here we've got our list of ice creams. Now, the list view, that's the best that it can do. We haven't told our UI what it should be doing with ice cream, so the best it can do is that object.toString. That's all it can do. So it just spits out the name of the class. So now all we have to do is use some data templates to just tell it how it should be formatting these ice creams. So that will keep our UIs nice and dumb with no business logic, but we're just giving it some hints. So let's bring in a whole bunch of ice cream images. It was under assets images, okay. New folder, images, right click, add existing items. Ice cream images. Copy, paste, there we go, select all, add. Cool. Okay, so to create data templates, we're going to go list view dot item template. There we go. So for our item template, we're actually going to give it a data template. And so we're going to do it like that. Now, these data templates reusable within your project. Windows 8, Windows Phone 8 sometimes have a few differences, so you may need to create a data template per project. But you can set up a data template per class type. So you can set up a data template for ice creams, set up a data template for customers, a data template for orders. And then across all of your screens, you can actually reuse that same data template. So you don't have to go and update your UI in three different screens to whenever you update your ice cream class. You just have to update your data template in one place, and all of your UIs will just automatically be displaying it correctly. So for our data template, we're going to have a text block, and this is where the bindings come into handy again. So we're going to say the text, we're just going to bind to a property, which is called name. There you go, so already in here, it's doing it correctly. So let's just change the font size to 48. There we go. So straight away, it's already showing all of them. So again, design time data, because we're doing all of this in an MVVM way, we have some design time data here, which means now when I start playing with my data template, I can see what it's looking like in real time. So could be doing something with the UI. I'm throwing in a stack panel. So let's see, we've got the name of this. So we've got the name. Let's data bind to, the category? Oh, there we go. So again, IntelliSense, it's already detecting what properties we have on here. So let's go back. So you can see we've got name, image, and category. Because data binding can automatically figure all of that out. So let's put in the category. So there we go. Banana blast is a low fat. Lavish lemon ice is sorbet. I didn't come up with the sample data, disclaimer. So we have those two things. So let's just put in an image element. We're going to have the, I've forgotten what the property name is. Source, thanks. Binding. So here we go, binding to an image. And I have a big banana apparently. So let's change that around. So we set the height to be 24. No, it's too small.
100.
There you go. That's just right. So, okay, so we have one stack panel with each of these elements going down vertically. So what I want is I want some of them to go horizontal. So I want my imager off to the left. So I'm going to stack them across this way, then I'm going to stack them down. So I'm going to put stack templates within my stack stack panels within my stack panels. So this stack panel, we're going to change orientation across to horizontal. Let's pull this out to there. There we go. So we have one stack panel going from this one to that one going horizontal, but then we go across in the second element to another stack panel, which is orientation is vertical, so we're going down. So that only took 60 seconds to go and do out a data template, but now our UI is looking a whole lot better. And we can take that data template, as I was saying, we can take this and make this a resource within this application, so we can just keep reusing the same data template across any screens. Hit F5, it's just going to work. So we can do the same thing with customers, with orders. You can also be smart with data templates. So within this one list, you may be showing two different types of people. You may have employees and customers, and the data template can be smart enough to check out which class it is. So customers, you're going to be showing some properties, and employees, you're going to be showing other properties. So you can do all of that really easily with data templates. Oh, and we're up to Caliburn micro bit, which I can't do. Let's just have it. So I'm pretty much finished, but we can do a quick overview of what we've had a look at. So to do the actual bit of doing the cross-platform bit was easy. We were able to get that out of the way in about 30 seconds, which was create a new portable class library, create a view model, put all of your logic in there, but just expose out everything out as properties. So do all your business logic in there, have a few properties, so then your UI doesn't need to do any much more than just binding to it. So if you go through and you do these techniques like this, then you'll be able to just do all of this. Then you'll be able to create those two applications, submit them to the store and win some prizes. Now, if any of you want this code, as I said, it's all up on GitHub. So if I go view on GitHub. So if you go, there you go, all of the code's there. I'm going to put this into Notepad. Paste, format, font, 72. That's too big. Okay, easier way. HTTP, about me, David Barella. Still too big. 60. Okay, that's how you spell my name. So if you go there, I've got links to everything. Let's bring this up. About me/David Barella. Oh, I'm massive on the screen. Hello. So it has typical bio crap. But it's got links to my blog. It's got links to my GitHub. So the little OctoCat down there. So if you go on there, click it, it'll bring up all of my stats. I have repositories, I have everything. So you can go into there and you can get my demo with all of those timestamps. So if I go into here, where are we? So I've got a session recording where I did this a lot smoother. So that's up on channel 9. But if we have a look at the commits, if I click on the commits, so it's just like Visual Studio, how you can go in and do a series of commits. Git's very much the same, but if you have a look, each of these commits, I actually put in the timestamp of when I was up to at that point in the video. So if you want to follow along with what I was doing, so you can do step-by-step how to go about creating these view models, adding that iNotify property change, adding in that delegate command, you can load this up, go to the point where I did that. So let's see, if we go to bound the view to commands, we can go into that change set, and we can see the few lines that you had to do that. So hopefully that's useful for you guys. So that's that. So I might wrap up there. If any of you have questions, come up to the front. So again, apologies. I did the best that I could with 10 minutes notice. So hopefully you guys at least know now how you can do some cross-platform stuff between the two platforms. So have a good rest of TechEd.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.